I will now call to order the regular meeting session for the Planning and Zoning Commission for October 24th, 2024. Commissioner Williams, may we please have a roll call?
Yes, you may. Commissioner Brodsky.
Here.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Here.
Commissioner Placer.
Here.
Commissioner Stanton.
Present.
Commissioner Galway Jones.
Here.
Commissioner Williams, here. Commissioner Lowe. Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
And Commissioner Walters.
Here.
We have, see, the numbers have changed. We have 8 out of 9. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Are there any changes or adjustments to our agenda this evening, Mr. Zinner?
No, there are not, ma'am.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Ortiz. Is there thumbs up approval on the agenda? Unanimous. Thank you. We all received a copy of our September 19th, 2024 regular meeting minutes. Are there any changes or adjustments to the minutes? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Placer. Thumbs up approval of the minutes. Unanimous with Commissioners Brodsky and Ortiz abstaining. Thank you very much. Moving to our first case for the evening, case number 2033-2024, a request by McClure, or I'm sorry, 233-2024, a request by McClure Engineering on behalf of Fike Properties LLC seeking approval of a 4-lot preliminary plat of IG Industrial General zoned property to be known as Lots Fike Subdivision Plat 1A. The proposed preliminary plat presents a revision to Lot 1 of the 2022 final plat entitled Fike Subdivision Plat 1. The approximately 5.3-acre subject site is located east of the roundabout for East Prathersville Road and Highway 763 and includes the address 1365 East Prathersville Road. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may. So like you mentioned, this is case number 233-2024, a request by McClure Engineering on behalf of Fike Properties LLC. This is going to be a 4-lot preliminary plat on a site that was previously final platted in 2022 as one lot, and this was Fike Subdivision Plat 1. Around 5.3 acres in size, total area of the land, industrially zoned, and yes, this is about 400 or so feet to the east of the inner or the roundabout for Highway 763 and East Prathervilles Road. Public information postcards for this request were distributed on September 11th initially, then distributed again on September 20th to alert residents and owners of the canceled PZC session on the 10th of October, when this was originally intended to be introduced and heard. So here's some aerial imagery providing some more context of how the site is situated and what exists around it. Up to the north is actually residentially medium density county zoned, but it is not used for said residential uses. It is industrial uses. To the east of this site is planned manufacturing. It is the car wash club office and, distribution center. The lot to the west is zoned MC, the lot to the south, they're all zoned ML light industrial, but ironically enough, have a decent amount of residential uses, so a little bit of a mismatch between the uses and the zoning on the north and south of this lot. So as stated before, this request is for a 4-lot preliminary plat that was, which is from what was previously final platted in 2022. The lots are configured as illustrated here to the left on the slide. Notable existing encumbrances on the site include a type 2 stream buffer in the southeast corner, and this is for the Cow Creek branch. This covers approximately half of what is illustrated as lot 3 here. While this is not more than 5 lots, it still requires preliminary platting and is a major subdivision by definition because it requires extension of public utilities, both sewer and water in this case, and therefore this has a preliminary plat hearing. Important to note on this site, there's going to be newly dedicated utility easements, as I've illustrated here in red. This is for general utility easements. The proposed easement in first, I guess, starting on the eastern edge of the lot, runs east-west until it connects with the north-south easement, where it then runs north-south, and then jogs over to the western border and then up north. The purpose of running it all the way up to this northern corner is so potentially the lot to the west of them, if it becomes redeveloped, will be able to connect to city sewer because it presently is not connected to city sewer and has a lagoon. It's also important to note that the existing sewer services on the eastern edge of this lot are actually provided by Boone County Regional Sewer District at the moment, but the Boone County Regional Sewer District Board of Trustees voted to consent to allow the city to serve this lot. So this lot will be served by city sewer, but it will be connecting to what is BCRSD sewer on the eastern edge of this. The utility lot, or utility easements, excuse me, being dedicated to provide for this are all 16 feet in width, except for on the westernmost edge where it is only 8 feet, because the other half of that required easement will be dedicated by that landowner if they do end up redeveloping. Water main is going to be extended north-south within the 20-foot utility easement that is illustrated. Running north-south goes across all of the lot lines here to provide water access. And so this is just a little bit of a better look of what sort of sewer utilities presently exist there. The green line on the east is BCRSD sanitary line. The purple line that I have hastily drawn is more or less what where I would expect the sewer to be installed, and where the applicant has implied their sewer line or main would be installed on their site. This would then provide access to all four of the lots on the site. Another aspect of note on this site is how access is being provided to the lots in the rear, particularly labeled as lots one and lots two. The applicants propose this be provided via a 36-foot irrevocable ingress egress easement. The 36 feet is above what a minimum required paving width would be for a local non-residential. But 36 feet is believed to be adequate pavement width for industrial type traffic which may occur on this site. Also, just to note, lots 3 and 4 front on East Prathersville is classified as a neighborhood collector, but just a collector in general. Therefore, these lots, as they do not have 300 feet of frontage on said collector, would not be able to have direct driveway access to Prathersville, so their access will also be facilitated through this 36-foot easement. It is also important to note that the applicant has indicated that lot 3, the southeast most lot, which is encumbered by the type 2 stream buffer, is not to be developed. It is for stormwater detention. And that is what this slide hopefully illustrates. The area outlined in blue is what they have proposed for stormwater detention. And the inner buffer and outer buffer of the Cow Creek branch, stream are illustrated in red here. And then there's also a 10-foot standard utility easement that's being dedicated just north of the southernmost line on the property. This is standard when it's abutting right-of-way. And sidewalks will also be constructed on the northern edge of East Pratherville Road, as there was no design adjustment request for that at the time. So conclusion, ultimately, the preliminary plat provides all the necessary easements and access for newly created lots, meets the standards outlined in the UDC for lots, and BCRSD approved consented to city connection on sewer on the site, and utility easements are proposed to facilitate necessary water and sewer extension to provide for all the lots. So overall, the recommendation is approval of the Fike subdivision plat 1A preliminary plat pursuant to any minor technical directions.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, questions for staff? Seeing none, thank you very much. We will now open the floor to public comment. Is there any member of the public that is here to comment on this case tonight? If so, please come forward.
Hi, good evening. My name is Ryan Fuller. I'm with McClure Engineering. We're the consultant working with the Fikes on this plat.
Could you state your address as well? Sorry.
2001 West Broadway.
Thank you.
Staff's report does a pretty good job of, I think, highlighting all the important things for y'all to know when making your recommendation tonight. I would just add that as part of the preliminary plat, we looked at the location where this access easement or ingress egress easement would be located on Prathersville Road. We found that site distances were a concern, and so that is how we've landed on the location. That's really the only spot on Prathersville Road along the frontage of this property where adequate site distances could be met for safe traffic flow. Happy to answer any other questions you have, but nothing else from me.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this speaker? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that are here to speak tonight? Seeing none, we will close public hearing and go to commissioner comment. Are there any comments from commissioners on this case? There aren't any comments. Commissioner Stanton?
Pretty cut and dry to me. I would entertain a motion.
Please.
As it relates to Fike subdivision, plat 1A, preliminary plat, case 233-2024, I move to approve pursuant minor technical corrections.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Stanton and seconded by Commissioner Wilson. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Williams, when you're ready, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Galloway-Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams. Yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
There's eight yeses and one absentee. So the motion passes.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. For our next case for the evening, case number 242-2024, I believe we have a recusal. Commissioner Stanton?
I am going to recuse myself from this case.
Very good.
See you soon.
See you soon. That out of the way, case number 242-2024, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of P1316 LLC for approval of a PD plan to be known as Discovery Hotel Lot 2 and an associated statement of intent permitting the subject site to be improved with a four-story hotel. The approximately 2.07-acre subject site is located south of the Town Place Inn and Suites and east of Nakona Parkway and includes the address 4408 Nakona Parkway. May we please have a staff report?
Yeah. So kind of as you mentioned, this is a request to approve a PD plan to be known as the Discovery Hotel Lot 2. The site is located at 4408 Nakona Parkway, and it covers an area of 2.07 acres. The public was notified via these varying methods, the postcard, letters, and tribune ad at the dates listed on the slide. Here's an aerial image of the site that's in question to kind of envision how it will fit into the mold of the surrounding area. Going into the background, the applicant is seeking the approval of Discovery Hotel Lot 2 and proposing the construction of a four-story hotel containing a gross floor area of 60,000 square feet and the approval of a site-specific statement of intent. The area is currently zoned PD, and the adjacent zoning is a combination of mixed use and PD. The MC is located to the south, and the PD zoning is to the north and to the west. Going into some background, lots 1 and 2 were rezoned to PD in 2023 to establish a consistent zoning. So this may have been where some members have seen a lot 1 before. Or lot 2, excuse me, which is vacant in the image on the left of the slide. The PD plan and statement of intent approved in 2023 for both lots 1 and 2 permit hotel construction. The submitted PD plan and the SOI are consistent with the uses authorized in the 2023 plan. That is referring to the PD plan and the statement of intent submitted with Discovery Hotel Lot 2. Also, the site is adequately served by public infrastructure and is accessible from both Nakona Parkway and Ponderosa Drive. Going into the metrics of the hotel, this is slated to be a four-story hotel that is 55 feet tall, which will contain 111 guest rooms. Kind of going into the makeup of the building materials, there is said to be 55% minimum of the facade to be glazing, stone brick, doors, louvers, and architectural metals. There's also a 17% minimum of fenestration that is outlined in the plan, and a maximum of 45% of the facade to be EIS, also known as exterior insulation and finish system. Here's an elevation kind of depicting what the hotel would look like when it is erected. The top image would be the front of the hotel, and the bottom would be the rear. Within this image, it's hard to see as it is in black and white, but there would be three different colors kind of outlined on the hotel. And yeah, with that, the metal coat, metal areas that would be listed on the hotel are also demonstrated. To elaborate more, the plan adheres to the impervious limits outlined in the Phillips tract area, and 20% of the site is to be landscaped with a landscape compliance plan that adheres to the UDC guidelines. In conclusion, the site was reviewed for compliance with the UDC guidelines and parking for its in-site features, i.e. the landscaping circulation. Our recommendation is the approval of the proposed PD plan and the associated statement of intent.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, are there questions for staff? Seeing none, we'll open the floor to public hearing. Please come forward. I'll do my spiel this time. Name and address for the record. You get 3 minutes if you are an individual, 6 minutes if you are with a group or the applicant. Please start whenever you're ready.
Hello, I'm Jesse Stevens with the Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong.
I won't take up too much of your time. I think it's a fairly straightforward request, but so just a couple other things I might point out. Currently, the True Hotel, which was previously approved, is under construction. It's the lot that's located between our site and Highway 63. So if this gets approved, those two, timing-wise, may be under construction at the same time. Both the lots were pretty similar in size, just a little over 2 acres. This is going to offer a Marriott product if it's a Fairfield Inn, is what this particular hotel will be. You've seen this, it's similar in size to the True Hotel that's being built adjacent to it, about 15 less rooms than the True. It does have a portico, a more elaborate portico share drive-in feature, but other than that, it's similar in makeup. On the building finish materials, the EFIS is listed as a minimum. We'll do no more than 45% EFIS. It's likely to be far less than that. Probably comprising more stone and brick. That's all I really have to say on the matter, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for this speaker? Just to clarify, this wasn't part of the overall discovery PD plan before, so this didn't have a designated purpose prior.
Correct. It was just... The plat was approved as a vacant lot with a statement of intent, but no fake plan, so to speak. This is the real plan. So.
Okay. Thank you. Yep. Any other questions? Nope. Thank you very much. Anyone else to speak on this case tonight? Seeing none, we will close public comment and go to commissioner comment. I have a quick question for staff that I should have asked before. I'm sorry. This isn't going to affect the calculation issues that we were having with the overall discovery PD plan, correct? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. No, they will not. Crockett provided us with tables, and each of the figures that are outlined regarding to each tract fit within the allowable area.
Okay.
And do not exceed those, yes.
Thank you. I know we're running up on that becoming a problem and just want to make sure we're not there yet. Thank you. Any other commissioner comments? Seeing none. Commissioner Wilson, would you do the honors?
Oh, in the matter.
Can we go back to the slide?
It's there. It's in the room. Oh.
Unless you don't need it.
I don't need it. In the matter of case number 242-2024, Discovery Hotel Lot 2, I move to approve the proposed PD plan and associated statement of intent, subject to technical corrections.
Second.
Moved by Commissioner Wilson, seconded by Commissioner Ortiz. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none. Commissioner Williams, when you're ready, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Galway-Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams. Yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
By seven votes, two abstentions or absences, the motion passes.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. And for the record, that was Commissioner Stanton recusing and Commissioner Lowe absent. Very good. All right. Moving to our next case as Commissioner Stanton rejoins us. Case number 248-2024, a request by Jessica Yankee for approval of a conditional use permit to allow 121 Northwest Boulevard to be used as a short-term rental for a maximum of 4 transient guests and up to 210 nights annually, pursuant to Section 29-3.3VV and Section 29-6.4M of the Unified Development Code. The 0.27-acre site is zoned R2, two-family dwelling, and is located at the southwest corner of Northwest Boulevard and West Ash Street, and is addressed 121 Northwest Boulevard. May we please have a staff report?
Yes, you may, Madam Chair. So, as we have discussed, we're looking at a non-principal residence short-term rental application for 210 nights. Does require the conditional use that we have before us this evening. Property owner notification letters were sent out to not only owners of property, but also tenants, as well as neighborhood associations within 185 and 1,000 feet, respectively. There were 43 total notices sent October 7th. The advertising for this request was on 10-8 in the Columbia Tribune. The oblique aerial showing you the location of the particular site, and it's interesting, when I compiled this, I noticed I got the other site that's right up the street on Northwest Boulevard in this image, but did not highlight it. To the very north of the graphic, you will notice that is West Boulevard Elementary, and then to the south is residential development leading towards West Broadway. Salvation Army is the large building on the western edge of this graphic, and immediately to the north is a rental complex. This particular house is known by many a name within the city of Columbia, the Hobbit House, the Gingerbread Home, a number of different names. It is and has been used as a short-term rental since December of 2020 by the applicant that is here tonight, who is also the property owner. So we are in an R2 zoning district surrounded by R2, and as it's indicated, this is not the applicant's principal residence. This is an investment property. They are seeking 210 nights of short-term rental usage out of the property with a specified maximum of 4 transient guests. Transient guests are those that are paying customers for use of this particular property. It is not any other class of individual. Transient guest is similar to an individual that stays in a hotel. That is how we refer to them in our code, not only for the short-term rental ordinance, but as well as for taxation purposes when we talk about hotels in general. The dwelling, as I indicated, has been used as a short-term rental since 2020, December of that year. And in 2023, it was used approximately 130 nights as an STR and approximately 2 to 4 weeks by the owner for personal use. There has been no identified complaint record associated with this property, and there have been no other identified short-term rentals within a 300-foot radius after reviewing Airbnb, Booking.com, Vrbo, as well as furnished finders. So on the left-hand side of this graphic are images of the home, which many of you are probably familiar with. It is a very prominent historic property within the city of Columbia at the corner of Ash and Northwest Boulevard. It's a three-bedroom, two-bath home. It has a two-car garage and a single-space carport accessed off of West Ash Street. There is a very, very short driveway return into the garages, so there is no compliant driveway parking. As we have discussed in several of our previous conditional use applications for short-term rental, there often is a need to approve or contain within the approval recommendation a condition requiring that the garage be used for purposes of meeting the short-term rental regulation parking requirements. This request is no different. However, there is a way of approaching how you would like to have the condition added, and it can either be the two-car garage, it could be a single space in the garage plus the carport, or whatever other configuration you would like. But we have to have at least two parking spaces to support the four transient guests that have been applied for. A question that came up at our last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting based on the stated square footages within the application was it just a general evaluation of what was the capacity or the occupancy potentially available to this home if we were to look at the International Property Maintenance Code and its minimum square footages for bedroom spaces. I am not the expert in this area. That is our Housing and Neighborhood Services staff. However, based on my understanding of what I read within the IPMC, there is enough bedroom space that has been indicated on the application to have this home potentially authorized to have a maximum of 8 guests. However, based on the 3 available parking spaces, the 2 in the garage and the 1 in the carport, the maximum would be a total of 6. The applicant, of course, is only asking for 4. Final occupancy standards will be determined by our Housing and Neighborhood staff, Services staff per the IPMC as described within the short-term rental regulations, or the commission does reserve the right to just cut to the chase and say that as a condition of CUP approval, the maximum number of transient guests permitted on this property is 4. And at that point, we would basically resolve the issue. You have more than enough parking at this point, however you decide you want to put that condition in, but the maximum number of guests equals what the applicant has sought. There is no ADU present on the property, and when we calculate the total number of parcels within 185 feet, we come up with 21, and of those 21 properties, 9 are owner-occupied and 12 are renter. There were 2 homeowners associations that were notified in the total notification of 40 of the 43 notices. So you can imagine the majority of the notices that were sent were to rental units and rental occupants. There were no comments submitted in opposition to the use. There was, as you saw hopefully yesterday and before you this evening, a comment of support for this particular request. And unlike many of the calls I receive, there were actually a lot of calls that were supportive of continuing to allow this structure to be used as a short-term rental, and more expressed of, is the house going to be demolished? Or is it being sought to be, you know, something done differently with it? And as I explained to these interested citizens, no, there is no demolition permit on it, and this is what the applicant would like to do. They all seemed to calm down and basically said, great, that's better than anything that we could have hoped for. So, As with all of our short-term rental applications that are CUP, they are required to comply with our general and our short-term rental specific CUP criteria, which are defined within Section 29-6.4 M2I and III of the UDC. And I don't like to say III too much, but that's okay. Short-term rentals are permitted in the R2 zoning district subject to this CUP and a certificate of short-term rental compliance, which is issued by our Housing and Neighborhood Services Department, and finally, a business license with an accommodation tax remittance account, which would be issued by our Business Licensing Office, which is a division of our Finance Department. Approval of the CUP would fulfill several goals and objectives of our comprehensive plan, which are as follows. It would meet Policy 2, Strategy 1, which is on page 144 of the plan, which talks about mixed uses within neighborhoods. Short-term rentals, while we have consider them commercial, and therefore when you bring commercial uses within a neighborhood, you create mixed use. While not complete mixed use, because this is a residential use, mixed uses within this particular policy and strategy really were derived more from true retail-type mixed uses. This still brings in a different type of land use within the neighborhood, and therefore it is, in our opinion from the staff, mixed use and supported by this particular policy and strategy. The land use and growth management policy and strategy that is supported, the underlying rationale for that is the regulations that we have. We have a very deliberate process that we go through to evaluate the appropriateness of a short-term rental within the locations that they are being sought. That is what is espoused within Policy 3 and Strategy 3 on page 146 of the plan. So we believe that it is, this application is also consistent with that. And then finally, economic development, Policy 3, Strategy 2 on page 149 of the plan, that really speaks to the idea of supporting entrepreneurial efforts, which we believe short-term rental has, as well as opening the opportunity for all to participate in the alternative housing market. Parcel is supported by adequate utilities, and the dwelling abuts two major collector roadways. Both Ash and West are both major collectors. Parking is restricted on West Ash, basically east of the driveway approach for the site, as defined and described in the staff report. And then parking compliant with the city's parking standards is allowed on West Boulevard. Now, what I could tell you and what many of you maybe have personally observed if you drive past this property to and from the west side of town, parking on either one of those streets probably is taking one's life in their own hands. And I have never seen a vehicle parked out in front of this home at any point given the volume of traffic that's at this intersection. That is not to say, however, that should parking be needed by a visitor or somebody else, that they would not have the ability to do so on street. The ordinance is structured such that use of the dwelling unit as a short-term rental must provide off-street parking, hence the reason why we front-loaded this presentation with the need for a condition that would allocate the garage and the carport space to meet that standard. Guest parking, however, could potentially be met by other means. And the rear yard along the what would be the western and then the southern portions of the property is partially fenced. There is significant mature landscape screening in place, a very quaint and private rear yard area to be able to be enjoyed when we went out and we did the inspection of the property prior to preparing the report. So, as with any potential use of a dwelling unit for short-term rental purposes, the intensity of that use may be greater than what one would see for a single-family home. And that is just due to the fact that you have a higher frequency of turnover based on the guest comings and goings. Noise impacts are likely very minimal, given the location at the two at the intersection of these two collector roads. And furthermore, the multifamily or the rental properties that are immediately to the north of this, it is a duplex development, probably are generating as a significant inflow and outflow of traffic as you may see this particular residence being generating as a short-term rental, but with more frequent changeover in residence, unlike what you'll get to the north. As noted, The dwelling has been used as a short-term rental in the past, and in 2023 it was used for 130 nights. According to the applicant, they've indicated that 2024 looks to be about the same, but we haven't completed the counting period for this year. The parking availability will restrict, as I pointed out earlier, the occupancy load that this house can have. And furthermore, if a condition is placed on the approval of this request, if that is desired, that would further ensure that parking and occupancy are tied directly together. The short-term regulations, as we have discussed in prior applications, when they were adopted prior to February of this year, we had no means by which to address potential negative impacts of people using their dwelling for this purpose. Now that we have regulations, we have a mechanism by which to monitor and then enforce, we create the ability to address those impacts should they arise. Except for our parking dilemma that we have, as I've explained, no driveway, and then we need to figure out how do you ensure that we've got on-site parking, the CUP analysis, as we see it, has been conducted and supports approval of this recommendation. The CUP would legalize a use that has been operating since December of 2020 without apparent incident. We do not have any record that there has been any complaints associated with it. And the SDR regulations provide the oversight that I just mentioned, and it would support those policy strategies and actions of the comp plan that we have gone over. Staff would recommend approval of the short-term rental CUP for this property for a maximum of 210 nights, subject to the following two conditions: no less than one garage space and the carport, or the two garage spaces be made available for when the dwelling is offered for short-term rental purposes, and maximum occupancy shall not exceed four transient guests, regardless of the occupancy allowed by the IPMC. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with the parties to this case outside of a public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, questions for staff. Mr. Brodsky.
Mr. Zenner, would it be, in terms of the parking, would it be adequate for us to just say that there would be two parking spaces available, or do we need to get into the details there?
I would prefer that you specify where those two parking places need to be. I mean, generally speaking, you would say two parking places on site. I would probably be more specific than that, though. Two parking spaces either in the garage or split between the garage and the carport.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for staff? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Zinner. We will now open the floor to public comment. Please come forward, state your name and address for the record. 3 minutes for an individual, 6 minutes for a group.
All right, hi everyone. Again, my name is Jessica Yankee. I'm at 17 West Parkway Drive. In regards to the parking, I would not put two cars in that garage. Due to the way the garage door opens, it would be a real fiasco. So I do request that it's the carport and the garage. And then I just wanted to answer any more questions you might have about the property. I have no problem listing it for four individuals. I actively dissuade more than four at this point, unless it's like a family with children, because I just don't want six adults in that home. Like Mr. Zinner said, the neighborhood truly does support this particular Airbnb, even some of my neighbors who are staunchly against the concept of short-term rentals, they appreciate what we're doing with the Hobbit House. So that's been a nice blessing with this particular project. So I think everyone's familiar with the home, but I would love to answer any questions you might have about specifics.
Thank you. Commissioner Stanton.
Ms. Shanky, thank you for bringing the Hobbit House out of the land of the orcs into Middle Earth, where the hobbits will dwell it. And I just have one question.
Yes.
Let's say the hobbits get the party in too much and the orcs come and visit. Who do I call? How fast are they going to get there? And is Gandalf coming to save the day?
I was going to ask Mr. Zinner if the ghosts count towards the room or the occupancy. I live 2 miles away, maybe less. I am pretty much always around. And then my sister-in-law also lives directly across the street, as well as her husband, who is a retiree. So typically, like, I mean, this week somebody needed laundry detergent, and I was there in 3 minutes with laundry detergent. So we're actively available, but it would be me as your primary.
And that is on your application? One of those three.
Oh, sorry. Mr. Calvin is also on there. Yes. And so Tara Calvin is his sister who lives across the street. But Mr. Calvin, who also lives in the Park Hill neighborhood on Edgewood, is also backup.
They'll be able to take care of any orcs or anything else that occurs. Okay. Thank you.
Any other? Commissioner Ortiz.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, I noticed that there's no sidewalk adjacent to the property where the carport is. Do you have any like accessibility features for folks that are staying at your property that may need to get into the house from the carport?
So you're asking if the home is accessible to all at this point?
Yeah.
So no, I would not say it is. However, Airbnb does not require ADA compliance, and you have to list in there if the home has stairs. So when people are searching for homes, they make sure to choose a home that's ADA accessible, and we're very transparent with our photos and our documentation that there are some step-ups. The home has been hodgepodge together over a period of 160 years. Mm-hmm. And so there's kind of different stairs all within the house, like one step up and stuff. So no, I would not say it's accessible. However, if I don't know if this commission is overseeing the sidewalk development, I don't think so, right? But there will be a sidewalk there.
The Ash Street improvement. Right. Yeah.
As far if the current plan goes through, there will be a sidewalk. And the big tree is gonna get torn down.
I've heard a lot about that.
Yeah.
Any other questions? So to follow up with what Commissioner Ortiz was asking, if you park in the garage and or the carport, how do you get into the house?
Great. So I use the rear door as the primary entrance.
Got it. So they don't have to walk around to the front.
Mm-mm. I actually don't want them because I'd love to give you guys a tour. The front door is pretty much original, and so there is a locking mechanism that requires like a very old school, like if you're reading historical fiction, where you can like pull up a plywood thing. So it's interesting and very awesome and historic, but no, I would not want people trying to access that way.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other questions? Seeing none. Thank you, Ms. Hankey.
Thank you.
Any other member of the public to speak on this case, please come forward. My name and address for the record, please, and then go ahead.
My name is Paul Stino. I live at 409 Pershing Road. So I actually live within walking distance of both of these properties. I became aware of them when I drop off the children that are my neighbors and pick them up. Ms. Yankee, this is nothing personal, okay?
Okay.
I used to work as the administrative assistant for the director of code enforcement in Jefferson County. So I'm a bit familiar with procedures. This sounds like it's been very well addressed. I've actually been in the Hobbit House. I had a painting and paper hanging business for 27 years, and I was invited to come and take a look, and believe me, it's aptly named. My point today is more along the lines of neighborhoods being inhabited by neighbors. I love all my neighbors, but I see the neighborhood obstructing the ability for individuals looking for affordable housing to be supplanted by businesses. And I wonder how many units that are STDs. Oh, is that right? No, STR. Beg your pardon? Can you strike that? No offense. any one individual or entity or organization, trust fund can have. So I could see someone who has several rental properties that decides all of a sudden that they want to have them be Airbnbs. Is there a regulation on how many units or there is? Good. And you keep track of that. Good. Do we have an estimate of how many STRs are in each ward? You find that there's a discrepancy between, does that bother any of you? I'm expressing some concerns that you have. Glad to hear that. It's an old man, okay? And sometimes we want to resist change. It's a romantic thing. My neighbor that I help with the delivery of the children to and from school is because she's currently going to school herself. And she's renting and would love to buy a house. And there are many like her. An associated concern I have, Mr. Zinner, and we talked about this, is empty houses that are just left to stand. It seems that property is a commodity, and investors and or just say the son, daughter of the father and parents who occupied the house and then passed away will sit idle just because of the property values going up. And I see this as an encumbrance upon the affordability of houses. So I just want to say that I appreciate the work that you do. I don't necessarily have anything against Ms. Yankee. I just have a concern about the community development and whether that is really in the best interest of the city. One final question. Are there incentives on the part of the city in like increased revenue for a STR versus a rental unit and or a individual owner? In other words, is there any benefit to the city financially for allowing a rental property or a STR because it's a business rather than just a single unit? And I thank you for all that you do. It's a thankless job, government. I wouldn't be in your chairs. I don't have a thick enough skin for it. And no matter what you do, there's going to be people that don't agree.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the speaker? Commissioner Wilson?
I don't have a question, but I have a comment, and that's just thank you. I appreciate you sharing. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Unfortunately, there aren't a lot of people who get off the couch.
One,
too busy watching TV or playing with.
One moment, please. Commissioner Williams.
I just want to in response to your concerns, I just want to provide you with some comfort, perhaps, that your concerns about affordable housing are deeply shared by this committee. And I suspect if you were to speak with Mr. Zenner, he could inform you of some of the other initiatives that we work on actively to try to create changes to the code that we hope will at least enable more or incentivize in some way affordable housing by reducing some of the burdens that might be placed on developers inadvertently by the current code that would prevent them from, would create extra steps that might be useful in creating affordable housing, more affordable housing. So since you were kind enough to take the time to come and present to us, I wanted to at least make you aware of that for your benefit.
Well, I happen to be, or have in my past, a direct connection with affordable housing because I work for JobPoint, and through our Youth Build program, we actually work with the city in building homes with students who are wanting to also get their HISET, formerly known as a GED. I also am acquainted with Mr. Coyle, Randy. I think he's with HUD. Mm-hmm. And boy, they are going to do some wonderful things. I'm also aware of the things that are being done by Love Columbia and Habitat for Humanity. And hats off to Jimmy Carter.
Commissioner Stanton.
To your question about the short-term rental situation, it's a delicate balance, Ms. Yankee could definitely testify, a delicate balance between property rights, overall good of the community. We have been on this road for almost 5 years coming up with the regulations and the framework in which you're part of today. So this conditional use is a result of the process of getting this under control, because before these regulations, there were no regulations. And you probably had a lot more, short-term rentals. You almost made me mess up. Mm-hmm. Short-term rentals around you than you may have even known. This process allows you to know who's around you, who your neighbors are, and what they're using their properties for. So this is just the first step. And, you know, if the people that are going through this, these are kind of the first ones coming through the process, hopefully they'll lead the way in a positive way, and then, you know, we can become better cooperative neighbors and feel each other's concerns on both sides. So thank you for coming and expressing.
And I appreciate your telling me that, Mr. Stanton. You know, one final comment, if you'll allow me. It seems to me that a lot of the ordinances are ignored, knowing that they are in violation by doing whatever they do, like too close to a property line. It's known as, you know, do and then ask for permission later. I think that's a pretty big problem.
One more, sorry, sir. Commissioner Placer.
Oh, just very briefly, because you asked if there's some kind of incentive for the city to have short-term rentals, long-term rentals, or owner-occupied homes. And as far as I know, there is not, but I will ask Mr. Zenner to confirm that. I don't think the city is making money from STRs unless something's going on I don't know about.
So, no, there is not an incentive. We don't incentivize anybody to do any particular land use. As with any other accommodation-related business, there are taxes that do need to be paid. As Mr. Stanton pointed out, prior to February of this year, people that were utilizing their homes for a short-term rental were not subject to a business license, and they weren't subject to paying accommodation taxes. like every other hotel. So we do, as a part of this regulatory process, should Ms. Yankee or any other applicant receive their conditional use approval, they would need to obtain a business license and then remit accommodation taxes for every night that they use it as an accommodation. That helps the city, not from an incentivization perspective of incentivizing people to do this, but the revenue that does come in from accommodation taxes does help the city in promoting itself for tourists and a destination. So that's a benefit to us economically. And it also does help to defray costs associated with regulatory enforcement.
Clarify, my question was, I did not intend to imply that the city was underwriting, you know. You answered the question, you know, was that actually STRs do have, they incur more in that they are considered more like a hotel, right?
Correct.
Thank you. I want to go home.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you, sir. Any other members of the public to speak on this case? Seeing none, we will close public comment. Is there any commissioner comment on the case? Commissioner Brodsky.
When I previously lived in Columbia, I owned a home five doors to the east on Ash Street. So I'm very familiar with this property. Betty Brown and Herb Brown were friends. I went on a monthly lunch date with Betty. I don't think Herb was invited. But I've been in the house. It really is just a cool property. And I commend you for preserving it in the manner that you have. I don't see any reason or any problem with this request, with the recommendations that staff has included.
Any further comments? Seeing no further comments, would anyone like to make a motion? Commissioner Stanton?
Sure, Madam Chair. As it relates to case 248-2024, 121 Northwest Boulevard STR conditional use permit, I move to approve the STR CUP for a maximum of 210 days, subject to no less than one garage space and a carport or two car garage spaces are made available when dwelling is offered at STR. And a maximum occupancy shall not exceed 4 transient guests, regardless of the occupancy allowed by the IPMC.
Second.
Okay. Motion made by Commissioner Stanton, seconded by Commissioner Wilson. Is there any discussion on the motion? I do have a point. Do we want to say one garage space and one carport space as requested by the applicant?
I accept that amendment.
Okay. Are you good with that amendment?
I am. Second.
Okay. So we're going to amend that to say one garage space and one carport space will be made available when the dwelling is offered for STR purposes. And that was accepted by both the maker and the second of the amendment. Very good. Now, any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Commissioner Williams, when you're ready, may we have a roll call? Yeah.
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Galway Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams. Yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
With a vote of 8-0 with one member absent, the motion passes.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Moving on to our last case of the evening, case number 249-2024, a request by Jessica Yankee, agent, on behalf of James and Betsy Waldman, owners, for approval of a conditional use permit to allow 316 Northwest Boulevard to be used as a short-term rental for a maximum of 4 transient guests and up to 210 nights annually, pursuant to section 29-3.3VV and section 29-6.4M of the Unified Development Code. The 0.16-acre site is zoned R2, two-family dwelling, and is located on the east side of Northwest Boulevard, approximately 180 feet south of the Agin Street, and is addressed 316 Northwest Boulevard. May we please have a staff report?
I'll try to work out my English next time. The Agin Street, it should have been Agin Street.
I apologize. I just read.
I know, and when you read it, and I've written it, it just didn't sound right. We have another conditional use permit, and as I said in my prior presentation, the original graphic that I showed for 121 included this site, but not highlighted. And we are at 316 Northwest Boulevard, just up the road, across from the West Boulevard Elementary School. Another short-term rental, non-principal resident dwelling unit seeking 210 nights of rental usage. Property owner letters were sent to both owners and tenants on the 7th of October. 25 notices were sent out, so this is a little bit less intense of a rental environment. That's what generates the fewer letters. And then it was advertised in the Columbia Tribune on the 8th of October. Oblique aerial, you'll notice the highlighted parcel there, just a little bit north of the midpoint of West Boulevard Elementary School, just south of the Agin Street, and it should have been Agin Street, and its crossover, North Broadhead. So you'll notice the majority of the development surrounding this is single-family residential, R2 zoned property. It is important to note that two doors to the north of this is actually an anomalous R1 zoned property. So apparently there was either a desire to downzone that tract of land at one point, or it just organically appeared as R1 and has existed that way for quite some time. But that is the only, aside from the school, that is the only odd zoned parcel, so to speak, in this particular environment. Everything else is zoned R2. So, as just indicated, we have the zoning of R2 surrounding the property. This is not the applicant's principal residence, and Ms. Yankee here is representing the owners, the Waldmans. We are looking for 210 nights of rental with a maximum of 4 transient guests. This particular home has not ever been used as a short-term rental. However, it is a registered legal long-term rental with a rental certificate expiring in August of 2027, so it was just recently renewed. And that rental, long-term rental certificate does allow the property to fall into the category of dual use. So should the conditional use permit be approved, this property owner would be allowed the opportunity to have 210 nights annually of the short-term rental, and then also simultaneously have it registered as the long-term rental to be used for the remainder of the year, or for any point during the year for rental stays of 30 days or greater. When used in that fashion, it is not required to pay accommodation taxes, and it is not considered a short-term rental. Those nights or days that would be being used for that single occupant or that one resident wouldn't count against the 210. The owner has indicated in the application, and Ms. Yankee may be able to expand upon this, that when this dwelling is not used for short-term rental purposes, it would be used by them personally throughout the year. However, there was no duration within the application provided, so they must travel back and forth between, if I'm not incorrect, the Kansas City side of the state to Columbia, likely to visit family or just to enjoy Columbia and what happens here in our community. There is no rental compliance record associated with this that shows anything negative. And then again, as we search through our typical searching of Airbnb, Vrbo, Booking.com, Furnished Finders, we did not find any short-term rentals listed within the 300-foot radius as defined within the supplemental CUP conditions. This is a two-bedroom, one-bath home. And as you can tell it from the front picture, and it's not a very deep house either, this is a small structure. We had one very similar to this, one of our first ones that we brought forward. And so the house in and of itself, and given its size, is likely going to control occupancy. It is very similar to our one of our original versions that we had taken across from West Middle School. This has a shared driveway, and it is a gravel shared driveway. This, however, is a little bit better than our one across from West Middle, whereas the driveway is very defined. It has two forks in it. If you've driven out here, you probably have noticed that. You can see a little bit of that in this picture. Defined driveway and parking area for the home immediately to the north, and then the straight shot in off of the shared curb access from Northwest Boulevard to a detached garage, which isn't counted as a part of the overall parking spaces. The driveway has enough room from the face of the garage to the edge of the right-of-way to accommodate four compliant vehicles, which means it is almost 80-something feet long between the garage and the street. 72 feet would be required to have four vehicles parked at 18 feet apiece. Based on the bedroom square footage that was identified on the application, the maximum number of occupants that potentially could be within this home, based on the IPMC standards, from our calculation, is three. So the applicant is maybe asking for more occupancy than is actually going to be permissible upon the occupancy determination that will be made by our Housing and Neighborhood Services Department. As pointed out in the staff report, the maximum occupancy allowed within the dwelling unit is a requirement to be shown on the certificate of short-term rental compliance, which also must appear on any listing on any platform to which this home is shown as an available short-term rental. That, as well as the license that it, the license number that is associated with this property. So the upshot to this is that if the home does not have enough bedroom area to comply with the four transient guests that are desired, the maximum that would be specified as a part of their short-term rental certificate of compliance would be three, which is, we believe, is the correct application. So I would prefer that the commission not, unlike our last application, condition the approval of this, if that is the desire, based on our assumed occupancy load. We would like the process to flow and go through its right steps. It will be addressed as a part of that short-term rental certificate of compliance process. So applicants asked for four, we've identified that is possibly only three. And again, it goes into what questions were asked at our last Planning Commission meeting. This property, as you can tell from this picture, has an elevated entry. And so that may cause ADA compliance. And again, as we talked about today in work session, the TBD, that is to be determined by our Housing and Neighborhood Services Department and BSD inspections, our building and our site development inspections. They will coordinate to determine if ADA compliance is necessary. And as Ms. Yankee pointed out in relationship to our previous case, Airbnb does not require ADA compliance. Very transparent with how they require their homes that they have on their website listed, if it is or it is not. Our regulations, however, stipulate particular things when you have a non-primary resident dwelling unit. It requires that you have to either provide ADA if needed, and that is part of why this evaluation will still need to be conducted. I can't tell you if it will or will not be at this point, but we know that it is an observed issue that will have to be addressed prior to short-term rental compliance certification. There is no ADU present on the property. The detached garage did not appear as though it had power, and there is no listed permit for an ADU for this site either. There are 15 properties that are within 185 feet. Of those, six are owner-occupied and seven are rental. There were several telephone inquiries on this particular property. There was no opposition indicated. It was more from the what's going on. I saw a sign. I'm not satisfied that the sign gave me enough information. I get a lot of different complaints about our signage, but nothing negative as it related to it being used as a short-term rental. Likewise, there were no letters of support received for this to be used that way either. As pointed out in the staff report, more than 50% of the adjoining property is rental. The total occupancy that is sought here for short-term rental is equivalent to that would be permitted in the R2 zoning district for any other rental unit that is out here for unrelated individuals. However, this home probably, if the square footages are as we believe, is going to be restricted to something more akin to single family. But the intensity of the land use, because it is a short-term rental, may be more than just a regular single family home or a rental because of the turnover. And the STR licensure process that we have in place now provides a means to address the negative impacts that could result from its use as a short-term rental. Not unlike our last case, we have to have compliance with both the general and the STR-specific CUP conditions. Same process. It's allowed in the R2, subject to the CUP, subject to the short-term rental compliance, and subject to the issuance of a business license and tax remittance account. It supports the same goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. Surprise, surprise. So I will not go through those. It has adequate utilities in place. The rear yard is fenced in. It has mature vegetation on the rear of the property, which is the eastern lot line. The detached garage along the northern property line buffers the home to the north. And then the fence itself provides separation between the property to the south. There is some vegetation along that line as well, just not nearly as intense as what is maybe along the east property. And as pointed out, the intensity of the use of the dwelling as a short-term rental may be greater than that of the adjoining properties due to the frequency of guest turnover. Noise is likely going to be minimal in comparison to the surroundings. You have a school across the street. You have other residential rental properties surrounding it, so the comings and goings of those tenants may be just as intense as that of short-term guests. There is parking restricted along the west frontage of Northwest Boulevard in front of the school. That is a restricted parking area, so there is no parking on that side. There is no sidewalk along the eastern side of West Boulevard. There is sidewalk, of course, on the west side. It provides access to the crossover, the striped crossover between Agin Street and West North Boulevard, where there is sidewalk north of Agin, but there is no sidewalk south of Agin Street here. There is dedicated and striped bike lane on both sides of West Boulevard, however, to allow for at least a pedestrian walking within the right-of-way to be not in the travel lane while doing so to get to the sidewalk network that is further to the north. Our evaluation of the CUP analysis finds support for this from a land use perspective. As indicated, the home has previously been registered as a long-term rental and is currently a long-term rental with a certificate that expires in August of 27. There is no complaint history record on this property as being used as a short-term or as a long-term rental. The short-term rentals will provide us oversight to address potential negative impacts that did not previously exist prior to February of this year, and then approval would support those broader policies, strategies, and actions of the comp plan. We are recommending approval of the requested short-term rental CUP for 210 nights and the maximum of 4 transient guests with no conditions. This particular property does have sufficient off-street parking to meet all of the demands that would be generated by the 4 transient guests. And that 4 transient guests, as pointed out earlier in my report, will be determined if that is the maximum or if it will be restricted based upon IPMC occupancy limitations prior to the issuance of a short-term rental certificate of compliance. If you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them.
Thank you. Before we go to questions for staff, if any of my fellow commissioners have had contact with parties outside of the public hearing, please disclose so now. Seeing none, questions for staff. Commissioner Brodsky.
Mr. Zinner, is the question, and I know we're not going to decide this tonight necessarily, staff will take care of this, but is the 3 versus 4, is that just due to the small size of that second bedroom?
That's correct. That bedroom is, it stated on the application, is a 72-square-foot bedroom. And that, based on the IPM standards of the table cited within the staff report, you have to have a minimum of 50 square feet per occupant in a bedroom when you have multiple occupants. So the one bedroom is over 100 square feet, which means it would meet the two-occupant classification. The smaller bedroom, the 72 square feet, only meets the minimum square footage for a single occupant, which is 70. And it doesn't have the extra 48 square feet to get up to 100 to have that 50 square feet. So, or doesn't have the extra 50. If you had 28 more square feet, you'd have 100 square feet, you'd be able to do 4. But right now, I think when this was done, it was probably based upon what the bedroom bed configuration was. There's two, you know, there's a bed big enough to put 2 people in it. And Ms. Yankee may be able to comment on that as well. But I don't want to make that as a final determination. There are other provisions, as the Planning Commission is aware, that you do have sleeping spaces. So if it's a combined living dining room, it may have enough space to have a pull-out sofa in it, and that may count. That's part of what our neighborhood services staff needs to do the evaluation on, and they'll come up with what that final concrete transient guest number will be. But it likely, the home in and of itself wouldn't be over probably 4. It's a 744 square foot home, so I mean it's a pretty tight structure.
Thank you.
Any further questions for staff? I have one. The first few of these that we did, we said subject to final inspections, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We're no longer including that in the motion.
We're not, and the reason I've opted to take that out of the recommendations is it's an understood. You have to go through the licensure process, and that's why it is not in the recommendations. It was, in my mind, superfluous.
As long as legal is happy and we don't have to say the number can go down when we vote on this motion.
I think for the time being that we've got it in the record, that's fine. But I can talk with Mr. Zinner about moving forward, whether we want that in the...
Yeah, we're still in the process of setting, not really precedent, but I just want to make sure that no one's going to say, well, the commission approved 4, you know, if we don't say something in the motion.
And I would encourage you, if you want to provide that level of clarity, you are more than welcome to do so. I think based on the assessment that I'm making of the IPMC, 3 would be the least that would be likely permitted, maximum of 4. I mean, if that's what you're wanting that.
I am comfortable with the way the recommendation appears on the screen as long as legal is.
That's fine. I'm
okay.
I'll approve moving forward with it. But
very good.
It just as a general matter, I mean, the more clarity, the better. So maybe moving forward, we do move that. But well, I'll speak with Mr. Zinner about that. But I think for the time being, we're squared away. Yeah.
Thank you. Any further questions for staff? Seeing none, I will open the floor to public hearing. If anyone is here to speak, you know the drill, Ms. Yankee.
Back, Jesse Yankee at 17 West Parkway. So especially for our new commissioners, I wanted to clarify like my involvement in this property. There are 2 retired couples that both have Airbnbs that they come to visit their grandchildren and their friends, and I co-host for both of them. We already saw the one at 400 Clinkscales earlier in the year, so after this you shouldn't see me for hopefully ever again. This is the last one I will be talking on. This particular property, as mentioned prior to the application, had not been used as a short-term rental. It since has been activated, but this one is primarily long-term nurses. So we've actually only ever had 1 short-term qualified guest. And because of the size limitations and some of the other proximity to university and other things, we are marketing to nurses. And so some of this was strategic because it's still listed on Airbnb, so I didn't want to be constantly checked upon about not having a short-term rental license because we're on the platform, even though we're primarily seeking 30-plus day stays. Also, as whenever we were working together on these regulations, it's nice to have some filler stays between those guests. So most often this will be 1 to 2 guests as traveling nurses. In terms of the small bedroom, it is very small. There is a twin bed in there with a trundle bed. So when they do have a fourth person, they can pull out the trundle, and then we do have a sleeper sofa if they want to use that instead. Otherwise, yeah, it's just she comes. It's a, like I said, a retired couple. They come to visit their grandchildren frequently, and otherwise it's used as the nursing lodging.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the speaker? Seeing none, thank you very much. Is there anyone else here to speak on this case? Seeing none, we will... Oh, for Ms. Yankee?
Yes, I
do. Would you mind returning?
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if the owners were satisfied with four, it looks transient guests, or if they were contemplating a situation where they would use the twin, the trundle, and the...
I am the one, again, I hate overpacking the places, so no, I said absolutely never would I host more than four there.
Okay.
And I did want to point out, I think this has already been communicated to commission, but the word transient is very confusing to a lot of our population, including somebody that was here earlier tonight. He was very upset that we were going to be offering a homeless shelter in this home. So there might be consideration for maybe a future amendment to clarify that to the general public. Just, it's been, with the Hobbit House in this one, I've had about 1.7 million phone calls. So just wanted to just offer that up as a piece of consideration. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anything? Okay.
Any other questions before you run off?
I actually do.
Oh, sorry. Commissioner Ortiz.
I just wanted to say thank you for clarifying and kind of introducing us new commissioners to who you are. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. There will be, and you'll see more of those coming because of the new regulations. People do need co-hosts if they're not living in town. So I have been actively been training up other co-hosts to help people. So if there's ever questions about co-hosting or how that works, I'm happy to answer those. Great.
Any other questions? Commissioner Stanton.
You brought it up.
Sure.
So does co-host mean you're responsible for finding the person that we call when the stuff hits the fan? That's my main concern.
We're listed as the registered agent in the application, so you can call us, absolutely. I think it's more about that we're available around the clock, essentially, to make sure the problems are taken care of. But, yeah, either us or the owner. I don't know the right way to answer. I think either one is appropriate.
Thank you.
Yep.
Anyone else? Are we sure?
Should I back up a couple steps?
Thank you very much, Ms. Yankee. All right, with that, we will close public hearing and go to commissioner comments. Are there any commissioner comments on this case?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Stanton.
If my fellow commissioners don't have anything else to say, I would like to entertain a motion.
Anybody else? Seeing none, please go forth.
As it relates to case 249-2024, 316 North Boulevard, STR conditional use permit, I move to approve the requested 210 night STR CUP for a maximum of 4 transient guests.
There's a second.
Second.
Commissioner Stanton made the motion. Commissioner Wilson seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing no discussion, Commissioner Williams, when you're ready, may we have a roll call?
Commissioner Brodsky.
Yes.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Godway Jones.
Yes.
Commissioner Williams. Yes. Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters?
Yes.
The motion passes unanimously with 8-0.
Thank you. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. That ends our cases for the night and brings us to public comment. Are there any comments of a general nature from the public? Seeing none, staff comments, Mr. Zinner?
Why, of course. And for our newest commissioners, this is the comedy hour that follows after the serious business. So your next meeting is on November 7th, and that will be starting at 5:30. We will have another work session. We haven't quite decided on what we'll discuss. I think we may continue our conversation as it relates to the application content and forming a set of questions, more standard questions that we will ask as it relates to short-term rental hearings, just so we are creating a consistent public record. We'll come back to you also, I think, with some revisions to the application form so you can see what we're looking at releasing as what I would refer to as version 2.0 of that application. Just so you are informed, I will not be here on November 21st. Mr. Kuntz will be making a presentation of the lot analysis between inside the stadium loop and the outer portions of the city, which he has pulled together. So we will be looking at having that work station dedicated to that topic. And we potentially may have a guest speaker at the first meeting in December to talk about a project that our public works and design staff have recently acquired a consultant for that will probably interest the commission. And the consultant has requested an opportunity to describe what their work will entail, just so you're aware of that, because it will potentially result in necessary changes to the Unified Development Code. At our regular 7 p.m. meeting, we have two business items that will be discussed. There are no short-term rental applications, but you will see Mr. Teddy in my stead to present the two that will be on November 21st. You can grill him. The first two that we have, one should be very familiar to certain commissioners that have been around. This is 4414 Smith Drive. This was a request that came in for a rezoning from R1 to MOF probably about a month ago, two months ago maybe. That MOF request was denied by City Council. This is immediately south of the Westbury commercial development. If you recall correctly, staff was offering the applicant an opportunity to have amended that application to the RMF zoning district. After being denied by council, the MOF, they had resubmitted and have gone through the appropriate procedure to get this case added to the commission's November 7th agenda. So this is an R1 to RMF rezoning. Mr. Kuntz will be delivering the staff report on this, and Mr. Kuntz for Ms. Ortiz and Mr. Brodsky was the staff, my planner that was here that did the first subdivision action this evening. So he is the one that originally handled the first request for this particular property. He is also completing the second. And then Rusty Palmer, my senior planner, will be talking to you about what is an anomaly nowadays. This is 5201 Ewing Drive. This is down at Legacy Farms off of South Sinclair Road. It is a rezoning request from an open RMF zoning district, our most permissible residential zone, to a plan district with a development plan. And some here may say, why a plan development plan? Well, let me make you informed citizens and commissioners. This project was originally proposed to be a cooperative housing development. And so in the RMF zoning district, the way that the infrastructure was laid out within this project, it had multiple detached single-family homes on the RMF-zoned land. Unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond the developer's control and the economy, the developer lost the property. And the bank has reacquired the property at this point and would like to develop this in a more conventional manner for lotted single-family construction. And the only way in order to address many of our Unified Development Code-related issues would have had to have been to have asked for a raft of design adjustments from our subdivision standards, because all of the public infrastructure is in place, or come through a plan development district and ask for a series of design exceptions, which would be shown on the PD plan. And so what Mr. Palmer will describe and present for you is a PD plan that is basically somewhere between a cottage housing development and a standard multifamily project. And it was the only way that we could figure out from a staff perspective to allow the property to be able to be reutilized with the existing improvements that were there. Trust me, staff is not taking its, reversing its stance on plan districts. We still would prefer to not see them like the plague. This, however, is the only means by which to get to an end. And so I think you as a commission will be satisfied to see this. It actually does promote a housing style and a topology here in a neighborhood that is of mixed use. This is immediately behind, actually, the commercial development at Legacy Farms, and then it is adjacent to what would be more conventional multifamily housing to the north and the community center that is immediately to the south of this. So this is a pretty good use of this property, and using the PD to do so was not our first choice, nor the applicant's. So don't shoot the messenger when he gives the staff report, or Crockett Engineering, who is the engineer on this. They didn't have much choice.
Is there another address? I can't find it.
No, there's not another address. This is the address that was assigned only because it's what we have in our addressing system. That's probably for a utility meter of some nature. I don't believe there is no individual lot or structure built on the property today, there's no individual address.
If you search Legacy Farms, you'll find it in Google Maps.
Yeah. Okay. So, just so you familiarize yourself with what we're going to be talking about on the 7th, left-hand map is our Smith Drive property, right-hand map is Ewing Industrial, or Ewing, Ewing Lane, not Ewing Industrial, Ewing Industrial's up off of by the landfill. That would be our residential area. And this is actually just up the street from John Warner Middle School on Sinclair. So if you're familiar with where John Warner is, Heritage Meadows, this is right in that general area. Those are your only two cases for the November 7th agenda. And again, I will be present during work session. We'll have a meal and we'll have some more excellent discussion. I appreciate your attention and your input for this evening. Mr. Williams brought up an email that was sent to me, and I think I will look at that in a little bit greater depth, and Mr. Craig and I will try to figure out how we can incorporate that also into the discussion. We believe that it is a Scrivener's error in the ordinance, and I'll make sure that we've corrected whatever references we're making in the actual staff reporting that may cause concern associated with that as well. Welcome aboard, Commissioner Ortiz, Commissioner Brodsky, and hopefully you will enjoy your terms with us, and we look forward to bringing you on and under the fold. For Mr. Brodsky, this may just be, it's like he said, it's his second tour, so maybe it won't be as dry as the first one, but I don't think the first one was dry because he got to work on the comp plan, so, and he may get that as a second round commissioner as well. We will be hopefully starting and launching the comprehensive plan updates in first quarter of 25 is what we're hoping for.
You mentioned that right after you talk about plan developments.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Are there any commissioner comments this evening? Commissioner Brodsky?
Just real quick, really looking forward to working with everyone. Excited to be back on the commission. And as I say that, did want to put out there, I will be missing one meeting coming up December 5th. I think Mr. Zinner is already aware, but put that on your radar as well.
Thank you. Any other commissioner comments? Commissioner Placer.
Yeah, several of us did attend the housing summit today, all day. That's why we look tired, maybe. But there was much in that report that was presented from Dr. Boston. I don't think we ever found out his first name, but it's Dr.
David. Boston. It's David Boston.
Okay. That should be part of our upcoming discussions on affordable housing.
Thank you. We will add it to the long list of tasks. Never seems to stop growing. Anyone else? Commissioner Ortiz.
I also want to say thank you for having me here. I'm very excited, and I realize I have a lot to learn, and I'm excited to learn with you all. Also, the Boone County Housing Study is available to the public. I know some people are probably watching. You can find it online. It's 300 pages, but a lot of those are graphs and maps. But there's a lot of great information in there. Yeah, I would encourage anyone that's interested to check it out.
Thank you. I will just echo welcome to our two new commissioners. Feel free to ask all the questions you want, and feel free to contact Mr. Zinner. He is very helpful at any time. With that, would anyone maybe like to let us go for the evening? Commissioner Stanton?
Madam Chair, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Please.
I move to adjourn.
Second by Commissioner Wilson. We have a motion to adjourn without objection. We stand adjourned.